everybody. Maurice Newman here with another lunchtime miscellany on the theme of books, reading and writing. During the course of this afternoon, I'm hoping to be speaking to Amy Doyle from the Fighting Words organisation. Roddy Doyle set that up some years ago. We're hoping to get in touch with Amy and speak about that. We might well be taking a reading from Roisin O'Sullivan Doyle, and there could be a long chat on giving up on books later on. There will be an interview on the issue of sustainable jobs and sustainable communities seminar, which is taking place over the weekend. And just to start us off and get us in the mood, we're going to start off today's music selection is all from Ian Jury. And two fat ladies, click, click, click. They don't write them like that anymore, do they? I think I have Amy Doyle on the line now. Amy, are you with us?
I am.
Very good. Amy works with the Fighting Words group. This was established by Roddy Doyle some years ago now. And it's the organisation, it's a charity that specialises in tutoring, mentoring people and mentoring people in writing and the creative arts in general. The target audiences are young children, teenagers and adults with special needs, which may include me. Can you help me, Amy? Can you help me?
I think, the aim of Fighting Words is that everyone has a story and everyone is able to write that story. So I think most people just need a little bit of encouragement, but they've got the story in them.
Right. Well, you say encouragement, and there's a certain skill that's required as well. Do you teach people how to write, or do you just try and encourage them to write whatever they want to write?
Yeah, there's a lot of freedom in the program that we have. Our programs vary slightly depending on the group that we're working with. So if we're working with our primary school, we generally work with ages maybe from 8 to 12. And we will have a program that we work as a group together for the first part of the morning and come up with a story. So we kind of take the ideas from the children. It's all their work. We're just there to kind of get the ideas from them and help them put it on the paper. And then they will finish off their stories. And the secondary school is slightly similar, but they will kind of be given a situation and then they'll work on that situation, create a story out of it, and then finish it off themselves. So we're more there just to kind of be a bit of help, give them prompts, maybe if they need it, and just to more let them know that they are able to write, they have the ideas within them, they have the ability within them, and they just need to know that they can do it, and we're the ones there to tell them that they can.
Quite right. Actually, I have done a little bit of work, voluntary mm-hmm. work with Fighting Words. I did about 2 years ago, I did a week's worth of the summer camp. Mm-hmm. Teaching, not so much teaching, but playing with the kids in the age 8 to 12. Mm-hmm. And I did feel that even if they're not specifically enjoying the writing, they tended to enjoy the idea that there is more to life than just kicking a football around. And their intellect was acknowledged, if you like, that they were told that you are a worthwhile person and that we think you're worth listening to. And if you mm-hmm. write down your ideas, there is an audience for it out there. Not necessarily that you're going to go out and be J.K. Rowling, but that that you are worthwhile. And it gives that's a great self-confidence. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed that, and I thought it was great for the children and the young people. Do you bring that same ethos to adults with special needs, and how do you go about that?
We definitely do, yeah. So what we do with the adults with special needs is generally we will do the same kind of format. We'll write a story together, first of all, and then they'll finish it off themselves. And we also have their story published in a little book that they can then take home. So they kind of have that sense of accomplishment that they leave the centre published authors, which I think is just, for anyone, is a wonderful feeling to have. and to know that their work is, you know, is important enough and is, just is important enough and is valued enough to be published into a book.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think
is
a very, very important thing.
Absolutely. And do the books go on sale, or is that just something that you just do in-house?
That's something that we just do in-house. We do that for the primary school workshops as well. They each get their own book. It's quite cute. They have a section on the back. Every child comes in, they get their photo taken, and then there will be a little section on the back that says about the author, so they'll get to write in about themselves,
fantastic.
And then praise from the critics, so they can get their family and friends to read the story and write, you know, 5 stars, can't wait for it to be a film, that kind of thing, which is great. And then they all get to bring that home. And then with the secondary school students, we actually do a thing called the Book Project. So every Thursday, we work with one group a year, a transition year group from lots of different schools, but one group a year, and we have them in every Thursday afternoon, and they work with the same tutor every week, and Roddy Doyle comes in sometimes to mentor them, and they will write one short story, and they'll work on it and do a first draft, second draft, third draft.
Wow.
And then they'll also learn about the whole process of graphic design, designing the cover, and then they'll actually, all the stories are compiled to a compilation and printed, like published into a proper book that is then sold in places like Easton's, and they actually go to the publishers themselves and see their words being published, being printed, which is amazing. I went with them last year, and to see their faces, just to see their words essentially come to life in a book was incredible, and especially because they work towards this for the whole year, so at the end, the pride they have and their ability is incredible.
Fantastic. And as you say, I'm just getting an idea myself here now. I can't make any promises, but it sounds to me like there might be potential there to get some of these guys to come in and read some of the stuff on air. Or we could get actors to read out the stuff on air.
Oh, God, yeah, definitely.
That might be.
So they currently... is it this Thursday?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yesterday was their... No, it's this Thursday. Sorry, yesterday was their first draft for the group this year. And they will... The book, they normally have a launch and all that kind of thing in and around April. So that would actually be fantastic that they could come in and around then when the book is launching and read sections from it. That would be incredible for them, yeah.
Well, I think it would. And actually, as I think about it, we've had a couple of people from book groups recently where we got our work experience chaps to read the sections of the book out.
And
they said that gave them a real buzz to hear the words actually coming to life on air.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I'll have a chat here with the powers that be, if you like, and perhaps we'll chat at a later date and see if we can...
Yeah, that would be fantastic. It would be amazing for them to be able to hear that and to have their families tune in and, you know, hear their words on air.
Quite right. And we could podcast it, and it would be
something
that we could treasure forever. That'll be a little Easter present, I imagine, around that period.
Perfect.
Yeah, that sounds great. Anything else coming up at the moment? Any special events you'd like to give us a heads up on?
Not quite now, just purely because it's coming up to Christmas. So Christmas kind of takes over, unfortunately.
Well, only the last third of the year.
A nice thing, though, is we recently got a mention at the Dublin Animation Awards. So as well as... as well as stories, we also sometimes work with Brown Bag Films, and there's people behind Doc McStuffins and Henry Hugglemonster, and like award-winning films. And we work with them, and basically they help bring the young people's stories to life. We made a wonderful short with them, and we got an honourable mention at the Dublin Animation Awards, which was pretty fantastic. So
absolutely. Well, I'm definitely going to follow up on this, the idea of doing a programme with us, perhaps, whether we do it as a one-off or as a series of three or four, so we can get them in.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. We have in the past done, as a part of our summer camps, we have done things touching on radio and, you know, writing for radio and that sort of thing. So there's also potential there that, you know, they could do the summer camp and have a trip out to the studio or something like that.
Now you're running the operation. let's take it one step at a time. Okay, well, listen, I will be in touch with you later on. I'm going to play a tune now, and then, as it happens, I have somebody reading out, somebody that we got in to read out a little piece for me that refers to something we did last week.
Fantastic.
But I'll be in touch. I'll probably be in touch in the next week or so.
I have brilliant. Thank you very much for having me.
Not at all. All the best, mate.
Okay, bye.
And there was Ian Jury again with a very seasonal tune, Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. That's my kind of Christmas. Now, if anyone was listening last week, they may remember that I talked about whether one should see the book or the film first, or read the book or see the film, and which will lend you the most pleasure, which sequence of events. And I argued in favour, against myself, that it's best to read the book. Second, to see the film and then read the book, because there's much more in the book that you'll enjoy. And if you read the book first, you'll go to the film and go, oh, where's that character? Oh, this happened. It's not in the film. So that was mine. And I got into conversation with a young lady by the name of Roisin O'Sullivan Doyle. And Roisin agreed with me. And we got talking about it. And she mentioned a film that I hadn't mentioned, but which she had seen first and then read the book. And the film was The Hunger Games. And she'd really, really enjoyed the film and is now a great fan of the books. So I asked her if she'd read the first few pages of The Hunger Games to give us a flavour of what was going on there.
When I wake up, the other side of the bed is cold. My fingers stretch out, seeking prims, wrought, but finding only rough canvas cover of the mattress. She must have had bad dreams and climbed in with her mother. Of course she did. This is the day of the weeping. I prop myself up on one elbow. There is enough light in the bedroom to see them. My little sister, Prim, curled up on her side, cocooned in my mother's body, their cheeks pressed together in sleep. My mother looks younger, still wound, but not so beaten down. Prim's face is as fresh as raindrop, as lovely as the primrose for which she was named by my mother, who was very beautiful once too, or so they tell me. Sitting at Prim's knees, guarding her, is the world's ugliest cat, mashed in nose, half of one ear missing, eyes the colour of a rotten squash. Prim named him Buttercup, insisting that his muddy yellow coat matched the bright flower. He hates me, or at least distrusts me. Even though it was years ago, I think he still remembers how I treat to drown him in a bucket when Prim brought him home. Scrawny kitten, belly swollen with worms, crawling with fleas. The last thing I needed was another mouth to feed. But Prim begged so hard, cried even, I had to let him stay. It turned out okay. My mother got rid of the vermin and he's a born mouser. Even catches the occasional rat. Sometimes when I clean a kill, I feed Buttercup the entrails. He has stopped hissing at me. Entrails, no hissing. This is the closest we will ever come to love. I swing my legs off the bed and slide into my hunting boots. Supply leather that has molded to my feet. I pull on trousers, a t-shirt, tuck my long dark braid up into a cap and grab my fragged bag on the table under a wooden board to protect it from hunger, rat and cat. A likely sits a perfect little goat cheese wrapped in basil leaves. Prim's gift to me, reaping day. I put the cheese carefully in my pocket as I slip outside. Our part of District 12, nicknamed the Shum, is usually crawling with coal miner heading out to the morning shift at this hour. Men and women with hunched shoulders, swollen knuckles, many of whom have long since stopped trying to scrub the coal dust out of their broken nails, the lines of their sunken faces.
There you go. That was Roisin reading from The Hunger Games. Well done, Roisin. Delightful. Now, here's a little something for you might be interested in. It's nothing to do with writing, but it excites me. It's a clown competition. You can discover the clown within yourself in a one-day workshop. Well, look, they're saying here that it's going to make you into a clown. Let's keep your fingers crossed and see if it does. So if you fancy having a go at clowning and discovering your inner clown, on Saturday the 5th, I think that's a week tomorrow, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m, St. Joseph's Secondary School in Stonybatter will be offering you the opportunity to find out just how funny you are. You can phone in to book a place in the workshop. The number is 01, of course, Dublin, 867-1190. I'll give you that again. It's 867-1190. I'm going to go to a short break now, and when we come back, I'm going to be talking about giving up on books. Hello, and welcome back. Now, I want to talk about giving up on books. I've just given up on a book about halfway through. The book's called Under Major Domo Minor, and it's by Patrick DeWitt. DeWitt had another book out last year, and it was fantastic. It's called The Sisters Brothers. It's a Gold Rush set cowboy story about two really tough killer Dylan Miller sort of shoot-em-up brothers who unfortunately have the surname Sisters, so The Sisters Brothers. And it's a great book. It rocks along, and it's really enjoyable in every way for people who enjoy a story that's full of that's vibrant and full of action and event. And I saw this new book, Under Major Domo Minor, in a bookshop last week. It's the same idea. The guy has the job of an under major domo, and his name is Minor. So he likes those kind of puns. And it had a similar front page to The Sisters Brothers, same sort of, obviously the same designer, and I checked the back page blurb, all very promising, and the quotes from the positive reviews said it was going to be another cracker, and this one is set, it's not a cowboy film, it's set in a sort of Kafka-esque Central Europe. I read the first couple of paragraphs, which seemed good, and this is the process I always use when I'm buying a book, is I read the first page or a couple of paragraphs, and then I turn to page 69. And if you do that, what you see is if the promise of the stylish opening, if it's a great for at first page and you turn to page 69 and the style is still pretty much the same, there's a good chance that the promise of that opening is being fulfilled and the whole book will be worth or will appeal to you personally. I mean, if you don't like it, you don't like it. But if you do, you do. And yeah, that's what I always do. I don't remember starting to do this in bookshops. I only noticed that I was doing it a couple of years ago when somebody had said, how do you decide what book you're going to buy? Anyway, Under Major Domo Minor, it seemed great and it seemed readable and I bought it. Now, I stopped reading around page 85 and that's because I was bored. And the book was getting more and more depressing in a very, very special way. That's only the most whimsical, comedic European, sort of Central European writers can be. There's a whole list of dull writers, or writers that I find dull, who are lauded as being the greats of European literature. For me, this list of dull, depressing ones includes Yaroslav Hašek. You may have heard of The Good Soldier Shvek. He wrote that. I gave up on that actually 10 pages from the end. I just didn't care that much, but felt I had to read it, some sort of duty to read it. Also, I find anything by Milan Kundera, you know, The Unbearable Lightness of Being. The unbearable boringness of reading that, really. Anything by Michael Houellebecq, the French genius. His first breakthrough book was Atomized. Again, just unreadable for me. And then anything by Gunter Grass. Again, just way too intellectual. Just above my head, I suppose. There are many, many others. There are very few people who are not above my head. I suppose. So then I asked myself, when do you give up on a book? For me, it's the point when picking it up to read it, when you put it down from it and picking it up becomes a bit of a chore. I mean, have you ever tried, if you've ever tried to read Ulysses, I've tried it about four times. I always start well because it is fantastically well written with a brilliant first page. It make you weep with joy at how beautifully written it is. And those are just some of the many reasons that Joyce is one of the best regarded writers in the world. Even 100 years later, he's still regarded as one of the greats. But he didn't knock out sort of page-turning thrillers. He wasn't John Grisham. So I've tried sneaking up on Joyce via less sort of iconic novels and stories, Dubliners, Portrait of the Artist and so forth, but never really got past page 20. But I found something out quite recently that if you read it out loud to yourself, it has more resonance. I was never a fan of Roddy Doyle, for instance. For years, people going on, Roddy Doyle's fantastic, he's really good, and I was sort of not getting it. And then one day I was reading Paddy Clark, Ha Ha Ha, to myself, and thinking, Paddy Clark, no, on the verge of putting it down forever. And my son, who was aged about seven at the time, came in and said, what are you reading? And I showed it to him and said, read me a bit. And I started reading the book out loud. And within two or three pages, I actually got the rhythm of the writing, and subsequently had to revisit all of Roddy Doyle's books because I'd not sort of read them with the right rhythm, if you like, and suddenly really enjoyed them. And I found that with Ulysses, with Joyce, if you read it out loud, it sounds fantastic and wonderful. It's just a bit wearing to read all this marvellous musical language out and just hear it in your head. I'm going to play a little bit later on so you can perhaps see what I'm getting at there. I did read Salman Rushdie, and he was, now I stress that he was, astonishing. He wrote the Satanic Verses, which got him into a lot of trouble, and it's a brilliant book. It's got a story and a narrative that you can follow. It's got funny bits and magical bits, and the writing can take your breath away. It can be that beautiful. And following that, I read Midnight's Children, which is a touch more difficult sort of in complexity, but worth the effort. Absolutely magnificent, though. I mean, well worth reading. But Satanic Verses were written in 1988 and Midnight's Children in 1981. And I've tried to read any number of Rushdie's books in the intervening sort of 30 years, but they've all been unreadable for me. Now, I'm fairly confident that Salman Rushdie isn't listening to the show this afternoon. But even if he was, I'm fairly sure that he wouldn't mind, I wouldn't mind myself, if I'd managed to write two of the greatest books of the 20th century and then not really turned out much since. I think I'd kind of rest on my laurels a little bit and say, ah, bugger it, I wrote two fantastic books that'll live forever. If the rest are a bit dull, well, you know, so what? And I think I can say that without being threatened with a fatwa, as poor old Salman was for the Salic verses. Now, reading is very subjective, and I've always said that you cannot look down or up to people because of what they read. It's just it's something that you do for entertainment and relaxation. I've just made up a word. Relaxation. I want to have the freedom to say that I gave up on Joyce or Rushdie or Shakespeare because they were a bit too hard for me to read easily with fun. I like a story, plot, characters that I understand, things that happen that keep me interested. It can be great fun if you've got somebody educated in a subject matter telling you what you're reading as you go along. But you can't expect somebody to stand in your living room or bedroom telling you what you're reading all the time, which is a shame in some ways, but there you go. So I save my classics for the classroom. Reading a cowboy book or a sci-fi novel or a spy versus spy or courtroom thriller is what reading's about for most people. You can't allow anyone to make you feel less intellectual or clever or educated because you prefer John Grisham or Stephen King to Nabokov or Flaubert. Reading's a pleasure, and if you're getting pleasure from what you're reading, take pleasure in taking that book, flinging it across the road and shouting, "That's the worst bloody book I've ever read." It's perfectly reasonable. It's your book. As I said earlier, I'm going to illustrate this point with a few minutes of Joyce. The language is absolutely fantastic to listen to and read, but soon enough, if you're reading it to yourself, you want to get to some tangible, sort of understandable point, I think. Possibly I'm wrong, more likely just thick, but either way, here it is, and see what you think. The air without is impregnated with rain-dew moisture, life essence celestial, glistering on Dublin stone, there under star-shiny colium, God's air, the All-Father's air, scintillant, circumnambient, sessile air, breathe it deep into thee. By heaven, Theodore Purefoy, thou hast done a doughty deed and no botch. Thou art, I vow, the remarkablest progenitor barring none in this chauffeuring, all-including, most farraginous chronicle. Astounding, in her lay a God-framed, God-given, preformed possibility which thou hast fructified with thy modicum of man's work. Cleave to her, serve, toil on, labour like a very bandog, and let scholarment and all Malthusiasts go hang. Thou art all their daddies, Theodore. Art drooping under thy load, bemoiled with butcher's bills at home and ingots not thine in the counting house? Head up, for every new begotten thou shalt gather thy homer of ripe wheat. See, thy fleece is drenched. Dost envy Darby Dullman there with his Joan? A canting jay and a rheum-eyed cur-dog is all their progeny. Sure, I tell thee, he is a mule, a dead gastropod, without vim or stamina, not worth a cracked kreutzer. Copulation without population, no, I say. Herod's slaughter of the innocents were truer than name. Vegetables, forsooth, and sterile cohabitation. Give her beefsteaks, raw, red, bleeding. She is a hoary pandemonium of ills. Enlarged glands, mumps, quinsy, bunions, hay fever, bed sores, ringworm, floating kidney, Derbyshire neck, warts, bilious attacks, gallstones, cold feet, varicose veins. A truce to threens and trentles and jeremies and all such congenital defunctive music. 20 years of it, regret them not. With thee, it was not as with many that will and would await and never do. Thy source, thy America, thy life task, and discharge to cover like the transpontine bison. How saith Zarathustra? Dein cu trubsal melcast do, nun trinks du disus a milch des oiters. See, it displodes for thee in abundance. Drink, man, an udderful. Mother's milk, Purefoy, the milk of human kin, milk, too, of those burgeoning stars overhead, rutilant in thin rain vapour, punch milk such as these rioters will quaff in the Guzzlingdon milk of madness, the honey milk of Canaan's land. Thy cow's dug was tough, what? Aye, but her milk is hot and sweet and fattening. No dollop this, but thick, rich, bonny clabber. To her, old patriarch, per diem, partulam et perdundam nunc espibendum. All off for a buster, Armstrong hollering down the street. Bona fides. There now. Didn't you enjoy that? Well, yeah, it is. It is. I really enjoyed reading that out, actually. It's wonderful language, and it resonates within you. But like I say, it's tough reading. It's tough. There we go. Ian Drury, little rapscallion that he is. Very enjoyable. Anyway, we have now a little non-book-related piece. It's an interview that Mark Finnegan undertook. It's with relation to the seminar Sustainable Jobs, Sustainable Communities. And hopefully it'll come on now.
Joining me here in the studio is Tommy Simpson. Tommy's a member of Green Foundation Ireland, and he's going to tell us all about a seminar they're hosting this weekend at DCU. It's called Sustainable Communities, Sustainable Jobs. Hiya, Tommy. Welcome to Near FM.
Thanks very much.
Tommy, Sustainable Communities, Sustainable Jobs. It sounds really interesting. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, basically, it's Green Foundation Ireland is part of an international European consortium looking at how do we create permanent sustainable jobs in the community, not transient, precarious, short-time jobs. So it's looking at what new technologies have come down the road in recent times and how this enables this thing to happen. For example, we've had the information revolution, which with the internet we can find out almost anything about anything under the sun, but we've never had a manufacturing revolution where we can make things, do things, fix things or whatever. So this, with new technologies like 3D printing, laser cutting, all of these is, enables now the parts for anything like domestic appliances, washing machines, cars, whatever, to be made at the local level instead of importing them from China or Germany. Yeah. And that then we can train people up on how to do maintenance and repair at the local level.
Yeah, but I suppose manufacturing especially has become such a global industry, and as we know, lots of factors go into where companies and businesses decide to base themselves, whether it's mostly financial, I would imagine, is what normally the deciding factor is. But, you know, would you feel here in Ireland, you know, we certainly have the skills to attract businesses and companies here to do the manufacturing here in Dublin?
Yes, Ireland has been very good at foreign direct investment, in especially the information technology areas. But in manufacturing, we not so much, except the pharmaceutical industry. But I do think where we have the possibilities of creating small scale, what we would call mini factories or micro factories, if you want to call them that, micro factories, where people can now begin to use their skills and their talents and abilities to create parts, local products and services, because the software now enables transactions to happen at a local level on your mobile phone or whatever. We've seen it with the likes of the Uber and the Airbnb, but now this can be brought down to a local level where we can transact goods and services at the community level, and also maintain and repair. As I say, there could be thousands of jobs created at the local level just doing maintenance and repair of everything under the sun.
Everything under the sun. So, as you say, that's the aim of the seminar this weekend. And I'm just looking down the list here. You know, you've got some very illustrious speakers are going to come in to the seminar over the weekend. So maybe you could tell us a few of the names and maybe who they are and what they do and what makes them worthy of people's attention now this Saturday, because it's quite an interesting list of people.
Yes. Well, we have from the University of the Creative Arts in Surrey, Professor Martin Charter, who is the chairman of the Centre for Sustainable Design. He runs programmes called Makers and Fixers, how you make things and how you fix things. And he is one of the leaders in this in Britain, and he's coming over as one of our main guest speakers. We also have Professor John Barry, who is the Professor of the Green Economy in Queen's University, Belfast, an Artane man originally. Yeah. And John Barry specializes in what they call the circular economy. How we go, instead of now cradle to grave, we go from cradle to cradle with products and services. We do the full circle of how to we keep things. And also that looks into the durability of products as well. So there are two main speakers, Professor Martin Charter and Professor John Barry. And we also have Bernie Walsh from Sunflower Recycling. We have Sandy Dunlop from the Terranure 2030 project, which is a community employment project in the Terranure area.
We also see you have Duncan Stewart, who he'll be well known to viewers of TV. Duncan's very well known.
Absolutely. Duncan is the chairman of the Green Foundation Ireland, and he is very keen on pushing these ideas in sustainability.
Yeah. Of course, the most important thing as well, as you say, you know, this, the idea of the seminar is about sustaining communities through sustainable jobs and sustainable employment. So, you know, it'd be important for people from the area to come and get involved and have their say and express their opinions and listen to some of the ideas, because, you know, they're important stakeholders in this as well.
Absolutely. And I think it's different because I've worked for FOSS myself for 32 years, and I know there's lots and lots of training projects for young people and all different age groups, but at the end of it, there are often not any real jobs at the end of it. This is now what I would call a revolution. It's looking at how do we fix things at a local community level where there are permanent sustainable jobs for everybody, and we're talking about manufacturing at the local level for lots of goods and services that people need in their daily lives.
Okay, wonderful. So if anybody's listening, Tommy, tell us exactly. It's DCU this Saturday morning, yeah?
DCU, Saturday morning, 10 o'clock to 2 p.m. with a coffee break. We'll have two sessions. It's in the Nurses Building, room HG22, which is just on the left-hand side of the Collins Avenue entrance. Immediately you go in on the left-hand side. And could I just say, there is an Eventbrite. You can book online if you want. Mm-hmm. It's called Green Foundation Ireland, and you go into Eventbrite and book the seminar.
Okay, and there's a website as well if people are interested in having a look.
The website is greenfoundationireland.ie.
Okay, well, Tommy, listen, thanks very much for coming in and telling us all about the event. We wish you every success for it, and sure, maybe we'll have a chat to you again. You can tell us how it went.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Cheers, thanks a lot, Tommy. Take care, bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, Mark, for that interview. Very interesting. I'm sure there's a lot there for people to look at. I'm just going to finish off now with one last song from the dreaded Mr. Jory. I'd just like to thank Amy Doyle from Fighting Words for having a chat with me, and I'd like to thank Roisin O'Sullivan Doyle for her excellent reading of The Hunger Games. Coming up later, we've got, immediately after the break, we'll be having Doug Rogers with the jazz and swing music. Very popular show. Then Writer's Block, more about writing, with Morgan O'Reilly. That's at 3.30 to 4.30. And then Christine Farrell from 4.30 to 5.30 with the Weekly Diary. Okay, here's the last one from Ian Drury, and hopefully I'll speak to you next week.